The other night's question is not one of those that you really want to tackle in an affluent society, an affluent nation. No one has fessed up to writing the question. I don't know if that tells me something or not. I don't know. And we're not going to view any films on global warming. But we hear so much about global warming and all this talk about oil shortages and gas prices and other things. Does the Bible say anything about what we are supposed to do? And as I said, and no one has corrected me, I'm going to go with that from the standpoint of what are we as Christians, or from a Judeo-Christian heritage, supposed to think about ecological issues and how they impact us and how they impact other folks out there in the world. When we drove past County Square this morning, the BP station there on the corner next to the new Zaxby's had a price listed for regular unleaded of $271.9. When we drove past it for lunch today, the sign read $289.9. 18 cents in just a few hours. I don't know if they were trying to play catch up or what. But they sure squashed a lot of tomatoes. No, they sure did a lot of jumping on that price. Of course, they were a little bit down from over on White Horse Road, where the BP the other day went from 269 to 278 in the same day. I'm thankful, and I will continue to pat the dashboard of my 91 Honda Prelude with 246,000 miles. It still gets 30 miles to the gallon around town, although it rattles and clunks and all that kind of stuff. And it does burn some oil, but it doesn't put out the blue smoke. I'm not sure where the oil's going. I just know that it's down every so often and all that kind of stuff. But what about our responsibilities? I did see something recently that said, yes, temperatures are up. There is such a thing as global warming. There are fissures and glaciers that have never been in not only our lifetime, but the lifetimes of anyone who remembers or has recorded anything about them. Of course, then again, I was watching something on the Discovery Channel, and they said, you know, just before each ice age, there is a warm period where things warm up, and then the ice age comes, and we're really overdue for an ice age and should expect one. If global warming continues at the current rate, it'll probably be much faster and show up in the next 5,000 to 8,000 years. But we should anticipate one in about 12,000 to 15,000 years. I'm not holding my breath. But at the same time, we have to wonder, what about the world and what are our responsibilities in this world as children of God, as Christians? And there are all kinds of folks that argue either way, and this is not in any way on any course political this evening, because I think there are folks on both sides and even in between who have some good ideas, and others who maybe need to start riding bicycles because they don't know what they're doing. But we find that all over the place. So what is our responsibility, though? I guess basically, what is our responsibility as Christians, as children of God, concerning the earth as a whole? Now, in the New Testament, we have a lot of opportunities for learning about how we are to treat other people and how we are to share with other people. And even, you know, let that one who has two coats give to that one who has none. But what is or what has been that responsibility? The first place I want us to go is to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, when we have creation that takes place. And as you should be aware, because we've mentioned it on more than one occasion before, this is actually the younger written account, Genesis 1. Genesis 2, 4b and following is older as far as writing is concerned. But in Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 27, this is after God has said, "Let us make humankind," or people, "in our image according to our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air," verse 26, "and over the cattle and over all the wild animals of the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in His image. In the image of God He created them, male and female He created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that He had made, and indeed it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a sixth day. Every green plant. I mean, I can't eat squash anymore. No. Here in Genesis chapter 1, according to the writers of this account, God makes, of course, if you go through the stages of creation in Genesis 1, God starts with things that are presumably rather simple, separating light from darkness and all that kind of stuff, and builds on things. Actually, the rabbis used to teach that what was created after something was superior to it and had dominion over it. That is, until in Genesis chapter 2, you got the man created, and then you got the woman created afterwards, which would mean she would be superior and have dominion. And they said, "Well, no, time out, that doesn't work." And it's amazing. It depends on who's making the rules at the time, I guess. But here God creates humanity as kind of the crowning touch of creation, male and female, co-equals. And God blesses them and says to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish and the birds," etc. Some people have taken that passage, and the words "subdue" and "have dominion over" do carry with them an idea of conquest or being over. But you also have to remember, I think, or we have to remember, myself included, that at the particular time that the people are living through these things, and even later as they are being, these things are being written down, and they're in Babylon, and things have been, you get out in the wilderness, and there is a lot of fear and trembling and other things about the wilderness and the darkness and what's out there and all the animals, etc. And so in some senses, this idea of subduing and having dominion means to bring the animals and the fish and the birds in line so that they no longer are fearful for you or to you, but rather they are usable and they are controllable. But another interesting thing about all of this, and especially if we tie it with Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, is, I'll read that and then come back to this. "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to subdue it, to run rampant, and to eat everything in it." Right? No. No. That's why you should always follow along. "Put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and to keep it." And God said, "You can eat of every tree," etc., except for one. When you combine those two together, I think that God intended for that dominion and that subduing to be limited, to be benevolently used, We are to be caretakers. God puts people into the garden. And by the way, while we're not exactly sure where the Garden of Eden was, and if you go by some of the descriptions, it's somewhere between northern Africa and the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, much of which later became and still is desert. Maybe we subdued too much. But if you look at that area, the whole idea here is that of being caretakers. When you are a caretaker, when you are a gardener, and where I was going with that about the Garden of Eden is, the earth is our garden. The earth is our garden. May not always be Eden or delightful, but it is indeed our garden. We are placed here to take care of it. Caretakers do subdue. I mean, if you're a caretaker of a garden, whether it's a flower garden or a vegetable garden, or you are a forester, there are things that you must do to subdue things that are subversive to the benefit of the whole. Not too many folks enjoy eating the weeds and the brambles. And sometimes we have to be aggressive in subduing those kinds of things in order for the rest of the land to be productive. Whether it's growing flowers, like my roses or something else, or whether it's growing food. There is both the subduing and the tilling and keeping it. And when it says in Genesis 2:15, to till it and to keep it, that means to care for it so it continues to produce. We are to subdue it and use it in order for us to live, but we are also to tend it. And to tend it also means that we have to sometimes be tender in the way we care for it. So while initially here some people might say having dominion, subduing, hey, let's go out here and just take. After a while, if that's all we do, there will be nothing left to take. And there will be nothing left to share. And there will be nothing left to give. And so the whole idea here is, I think, right from early on, is this earth is here. We have been placed on it. We have been given abilities to do all kinds of things, and we have been given abilities even to process dead animals for centuries or millennia that then turn into sludge that we can make gasoline out of and other fuels. By the way, I heard today that it's going to cost twice as much to heat your home with oil this year than gas. It's not good news. But we can do all those kinds of things. We can genetically engineer plants and animals to produce even more than we could before. And so God gives us those abilities, but it is not simply an idea where we take, and do whatever we want to. That has to be balanced with a sense of responsibility. And not just responsibility for me and mine, but responsibility for the earth as a whole. Because me and mine weren't always right here. We have an ancestry that brought us from somewhere else, with folks who maybe had some difficulties. Now, I'm also not saying that we should, if we work hard and we take care of things, that we shouldn't be able to purchase and do things. I'm not saying that at all, but I think we have to be responsible in the way we do things. And that's not always an easy thing to do, especially when you turn on the tube and everything is bigger, better than last time. And so, I think initially the idea here is that we are put here as caretakers on the earth, and while there are times and places where we do have that kind of dominion, where we've got those agronomists who can tell us how to get rid of the weeds so that we grow the other foodstuffs or other things, we have to balance that with a sense of responsibility. We have the freedom to use the earth, but as L. Harold DeWolf titled his book on Christian ethics back in the 70s when I was in seminary, it is responsible freedom. Responsible freedom. Now, a while ago what I read doesn't really make me all that happy, because while I like some vegetables, I'm much more carnivore than an herbivore, and it almost sounds like we're only supposed to eat plants, right? That was in the old world. In Genesis chapter 9, starting in verse 8 through 17. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "As for me, I am establishing my covenant with you and your descendants after you," but notice, "and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the domestic animals, and every animal of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set up my bow in the clouds, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." And God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." By the way, earlier in the same chapter, God says, "And you can eat animals too." So, I like that chapter. Means I can eat my steak and my burger and my fish and my birds. But here, once again, the covenant that God makes is not just with us. The covenant that God makes is with the entire earth and us. And part of that covenant, once again, with every living creature, is that there will be care that is given. And God cares enough to say, "I'm not going to destroy the whole earth by water again. And that's my covenant with you and with every living creature on the earth." And so we share this earth not just with other people, but we share this earth with other creatures as well, some of which we use for food. That's true. But once again, it's not that we overgraze even that. So there is this sense of responsibility about the entire earth that we have. And not just a sense of responsibility about those things, but we even have responsibilities as time goes along to allow the earth to recover. Leviticus chapter 25. Verses 2 and following. Leviticus is a book of worship and laws concerning worship. "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, 'When you enter the land that I am giving you, the land shall observe a Sabbath for the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in their yield. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of complete rest for the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. You shall not reap the aftergrowth of your harvest or gather the grapes of your unpruned vine. It shall be a year of complete rest for the land. You may eat what the land yields during its Sabbath, you, your male and female slaves, your hired and your bound laborers who live with you, for your livestock also, and for the wild animals in your land. All its yield shall be for food." And so God provides here, even for a time for the rest of the earth to rest. Crop rotation is an ancient practice and an ancient command. And not just crop rotation, but sometimes allowing the land to lie fallow so that it may recover as well. That is a part of being responsible. Responsible in the way we work with the rest of the world, the rest of God's world. Because God does own it. We're simply the stewards. You shall count off 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the period of 7 weeks of years gives 49 years. Then you shall have the trumpet sounded loud on the 10th day of the 7th month on the Day of Atonement. You shall have the trumpet sounded throughout all your land, and you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. You shall return every one of you to your property and every one of you to your family. That 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. You shall not sow or reap the aftergrowth or harvest the unpruned vines, for it is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat only what the field itself produces. And while he goes on to talk about the year of jubilee and, you know, maybe if we make 50 years together, somebody will go back to that. You know, every 50th year, not only did you let the land go, actually the land went back to its original owner, but you wiped out all debts. Wouldn't that be nice? You wiped out all debts. All servants and slaves went free. All of that kind of stuff. But here, once again, not only does the land, the 49th year would be one of those 7 years where the land lies fallow, but the 50th year, so for 2 years you don't plant crops. Once again, a responsible way of allowing the earth to replenish itself. Because people are not the only ones that suffer. By the way, if we went back to the fall and the results of the fall, we would find that the entire earth suffered in the fall. It wasn't just the woman and the man. But God said to the man, you're going to work the ground in the sweat of your brow, and it's going to be hard to make anything grow. The entire earth suffered because we are, God didn't just create us. God created it all to be in harmony together. In Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 19 and 20. Interesting thing, even in warfare. Might stop preaching and go to meddling. But if you besiege a town for a long time, making war against it in order to take it, you must not destroy its trees by wielding an axe against them. Although you may take food from them, you must not cut them down. Are trees in the field human beings that they should come down under siege from you? You may destroy only the trees that you know do not produce food. You may cut them down for use in building siege works against a town that makes war with you until it falls. Even in those times, we are to be careful about how we treat the rest of the earth and how we lead it. Scorched earth policies. Scorched earth policies are not supposed to be part of what we do as human beings. And yet throughout the centuries there have been such. From the times that the only thing that you could use to scorch the earth was flint and kindling and allow the winds to take over and let it burn, to all kinds of smart bombs and beyond. We're not just doing damage to the buildings or the persons. We're damaging perhaps even our own livelihood, our own ability to continue to live. You know, rainforests are being deforested at astounding rates. And people say, oh, well, we got all this grass out here planted and we got all these bushes that we plant. I've never understood, and somebody can maybe explain to me, I've never understood why they go into a housing development and wipe out every tree, build all these houses, and then plant little shrubs. Taking care of that land, regardless of what we are doing, even in times of war, we are to care for the earth. Deuteronomy 22, 6 and 7. If you come on a bird's nest in any tree or on the ground with fledglings or eggs, with a mother sitting on the fledgling or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. Let the mothers go, taking only the young for yourself, in order that it may go well with you and you may live long. If you continue to destroy, and no, much as I want to shoot that big doe and take her home and eat her, if she's got two little ones with her or one little one with her with spots, she walks. Do I? Thank you? Yeah. Well, the little ones have to grow up. At some point they have to learn the realities of life, but not when they're that little. But all of this is to say we're to have a reverent concern for the creation, taking only what is needed to live and allowing the earth itself to replenish itself and to be replenished. Psalms 8. Psalms 8, verses 3 and following, remind us that we share in God's dignity and care in creation. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what is man that you are mindful of him? Mortals, that you care for them, yet you have made them a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You have given them dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under their feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. We're reminded by Psalm 24:1. And then I'm going to jump to the New Testament real quick and then get some of your input. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it, for he has founded it on the seas and established it on the rivers. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it. You've given them dominion and put all things under their feet. Sheep, the oxen, the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, whatever passes. Therefore, in Matthew 6, verses 25 and following, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? If God, who cares for the birds of the air and who cares for the grasses of the field, is truly God, and if we are given an opportunity to share in God's dignity and care over creation, then is it not incumbent upon us to also care for that creation? Care for it not only so it sustains us, but care for it so that it sustains itself and sustains those who come after us. So, this is one of those hard topics, especially in such an affluent country, such an affluent society, one that for all of its good, we send food and aid and pledge food and aid to all kinds of countries all over the world, and yet we still have folks in this country who sleep on the street every night, who go to bed hungry every night. I said the other week with the fires in California and all those folks, and I hate that they've lost their homes, and I feel for those folks, but we've got folks in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana who still haven't got homes, and Katrina's, what, 2 years ago? A part of our responsibility is not only caring for the earth, but caring for those who live in the earth, so that others too may know and be able to live those lives. I'm one to talk. I drive a lot of miles every year. Like I said, I use my little old car, but I know it's also not as clean burning as some others. And so there are things that we can all do, I think, to try and help as God's people who have been given such great privilege. We've also been given great responsibility to care for each other, to care for the earth, and to do everything we can to try and tend it well so that we will have a place, and so that our children will have a place, and so that our grandchildren and our great-grands and on and on and on, and the great-grands of other folks, even on the other side of the world, will have a world in which to live, a world in which they can breathe air, and a world that will sustain life. It's not an easy question. There are no easy answers. I don't want to go back to a bicycle tomorrow. Although, I might be better off health-wise, right? Yeah, as long as you don't get hit by a car. All right. Or by a mad biker. But there are things that God calls us to be responsible citizens of God's kingdom. And when we think about God's kingdom, what do we generally think of? Where's God's kingdom? Most of the time we think of it as where? Heaven. But is not this God's kingdom as well? Does the Bible say anything about what we're supposed to do? I think the Bible clearly says that we're supposed to do everything we can to take care of the earth, to till the earth, to tend it with tenderness, and to allow not only the earth, but the other creatures that live on the earth to have opportunities to renew themselves. Even if it means that maybe we don't go that extra trip. I remember when we lived in Tigerville, and the nearest grocery store other than T.P. Wood's store, and you only went there if you were stuck and couldn't get anywhere else and you absolutely needed something, because it cost you about 2.5 times more than the grocery store 15 miles away in town. But we didn't make those trips. We think nothing about it anymore. We think nothing about it anymore. But maybe even just cutting out one, combining several into one. I'm not really good at that a lot of times. Sometimes I remember, sometimes not. But I think it's incumbent upon us to remember that we share in God's dignity in the world, and if we make the world a much less dignified and livable place, then that casts an aspersion on what we are called to be. So, that's my 2 cents and 32 minutes worth. Can I hear from y'all? Or maybe you don't want to. He who dies with the most toys wins. Or what's really more true is he who dies with the most toys is still dead. But what does he leave behind? And I think this is coming up more and more. And yet there is a large Baptist group that recently made some headlines at their national meeting in the summer when some of their leaders said that global warming was simply a liberal hoax. And that there was nothing to it at all, and we didn't need to conserve. We do sometimes, the greed does take over and all that kind of stuff, or we don't think. I remember changing my own oil, teenager and beyond, and you got some poison ivy over there. Well, hey, dump the oil on the poison ivy to kill it. One drop of oil can contaminate I think it's 750,000 gallons of water. Right. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. No. But, yeah. There's some things we bury that we don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. Yeah, Jim? And there are others. There are companies and individuals that will end up filing bankruptcy to get out, and because they can't, what it does to clean up what we just casually did. Some of it wasn't, we're going to do this and harm the environment and see if we can get away with it. It was a lot of it was we didn't know we didn't think it through. But companies get bankrupt, and then other people have to pay to clean it up. We can very easily do that to ourselves if we're not careful and if we don't watch what we do. What each individual does has a cumulative effect, both positively and negatively. We used to joke about a friend of ours had a van, and when we'd go to the beach and they'd be pulling the trailer behind us. Big van that had the dual exhaust and all the other, the V8 and all this kind of stuff. You used to joke about how many gallons to the mile you'd get. And so it's really, in a lot of ways, we've gotten ourselves into a situation where we don't know what to do. And if we cut back, well, then that's going to mean we miss out on this and this and this. But it's a... And yet I think that, of course, we don't always do what we're expected to do. I know I don't. But the expectation that God had from the beginning is, I'm going to give you this, and it's a place where you can live and you can raise families and you can populate and you can truly enjoy living here, but only if you take care of it. And I think what's happened, sometimes we have gone out there with such a cavalier attitude, not talking about we individually, but as a country, or seemingly cavalier attitude about things, and then other countries come along, and when they start getting prosperity, it's, well, we're going to do the same thing. Where it's going to have to stop, I guess, is going to have to stop with or get better, because we as individual children of God decide that we're going to do something, even though we may start small, and hope for the cumulative effects, and we'll continue to do it because it's the right thing to do. Oh, yeah. Yeah, water is, and I was, where was it that I saw a report? Somewhere in the U.S., things have gotten so bad that actually, and it's along one of our coasts, have gotten so bad that they're finding salt water in the drinking wells now. I saw on the news the other week that there is now a battle raging in Nevada because of some of the places in the mountains where they've got the aquifers, and Las Vegas is saying, you know, you've got all these farms up here and these ranches up here, and you've got all these aquifers and this nice, fresh, clear water, and we want to take it and build pipelines and bring it down here so we can build more hotels and more casinos and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing is, we didn't. And topics like this, I mean, I have to admit, topics like this were not discussed when I was growing up in church. The only time they were discussed is if you took an ethics course in, or an ecology course in college, or an ethics course, because ecology was a part of the ethics course in seminary. And so, you know, we have been responsible for some of this too, by not educators and clergy and all that have been responsible some too, by not covering those things. Anyone else before I read what I just pulled out? Oh, yeah. Overpopulation is. And it's not just in other countries, it's in this country too. Right. Right. You know, they used to say that, you know, the average family was a man, a woman, 2.5 children, and a dog. I was glad I wasn't that half child. But and a dog or a cat. But there, you know, there are countries, and there are countries that part of the problem with the overpopulation is that there is such a high infant and young child mortality rate, and yet large families are needed for various reasons or perceived reasons, and so continue. That is, and as we said with our Islam question, why some time back we gave a longer answer, but the easy answer to why is Islam the fastest growing religion in the world, because Muslim men are allowed up to 4 wives, and each of those will oftentimes have multiple children, so it's just by sheer numbers. The whole be fruitful and multiply thing is very literally taken. It's the old, I think you're right, Hazel. In little bitty things, we don't think recycling or other things. It's the whole thing of the experiment in ninth grade science class where had a big beaker of water and the teacher had a bottle with blue coloring in it and an eyedropper. And each one of us went up and put in one drop. And the first drop hits and it's blue and then it dissipates and you don't see any change. And the next one and it dissipates. But eventually the cumulative effect of all the small drops change the color of the water. And it is the same thing, but it's also an individual choice. We have to choose to do that, but we can make a difference. You're right. Well, it's right at 7 o'clock, and I don't want to cut any further into rehearsal time than already have. I don't know about this one. I recognize the handwriting, and I didn't draw it on purpose. I was fumbling those things around, but there aren't but 3 or 4 in there. So, I've heard the crown of glory is a special reward for the faithful, the obedient, and the God-called pastor. Is this a biblically sound statement? How does it relate to other church members? I don't know. I probably need to be crowned. Ball bat or something. 2x4. But, The crown of glory. We'll talk next time about crowns of glory and what does that really mean? Is it metaphorical? Is it something we need to really expect? Or is it, and how is it accomplished? Is it really us? Or is it is it us? Is it God? Or is it teamwork? And all those kinds of things. So, y'all think about it, and I'm going to try and be quiet earlier next time and let y'all talk to me some. Okay? Thank you for coming and for sharing this evening, and I hope that at least this gets us to thinking about some things that maybe we can do to make a difference. And thanks to whoever wrote the question and put it in the box. That's one of those that we probably wouldn't have dealt with. But as you go, know this, that you can make a difference. We can all make a difference in making this world a better place in which to live, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. But what we have to do is to choose to tend the garden that God has given us and to tend it in any way that we see we have opportunity to do so that it would grow, so that it will produce, and so that others may know life. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.